Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst, Darius Baxter, political analyst, and Yannick Lam, journalism professor and chair of media journalism and film at Howard University. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Yannick, I'll start with you. I want you to take off your journalism hat and put on your woman's hat, which is always there. Your impression of what has happened during the Bill Cosby trial so far?
This is a very complicated trial, and you know, for a number of reasons, because of the time distance, because there's so many women, and also because of, you know, who Cosby is. And I think that people can't out of hand dismiss the amount of time that's taken place since she first made allegations or some of the perceived inconsistencies and things like that. Because it's something that, you know, is very, very damaging to women, very damaging to girls. And at the end of the day, only the two people in the room really know what happened. So it's going to be interesting to see where this case goes from there.
Are you surprised at the surprise that the prosecution brought yesterday? Andrea Constan, his main accuser, the only one who is, because of the statute of limitations, able to bring about these charges in this case, you know, kind of the tale with which she shared on, you know, on the stand and just some of the other emotional kinds of things that she said, theater or the real deal?
It could be a combination of both. But, the real deal is the real deal. And whatever she experienced is what she experienced. And like I said before, I think it's a complicated situation when something that happens behind closed doors comes out in the public, and especially when you talk about having substances involved with it.
And then
with the distance of time, and you have so many other cases that are alleging similar things.
How about that? Scott, how much trouble do you think Bill Cosby is in?
Well, I think he's got a strong defense in this case. I've tried, as a former prosecutor, several of these types of sex crimes cases where it's her word against his, where there is a prior relationship, where there has been a lag time in even reporting it. And then when it was reported, wrong dates were given, that there was prior flirting between the two of them. And none of that suggests that no doesn't mean no. No still means no, no matter what. But remember, the prosecution has the burden of proof. Bill Cosby doesn't have to prove anything. He can sit there and say nothing. Whether he's going to testify or not is a whole other story. But he could sit there and say nothing. And the defense attorneys have done a pretty effective job in cross-examining not only the one accuser that the judge let in, but also the main accuser, Ms. Constan, as far as their inconsistencies in that prior relationship. If they continue to be that effective, right, and the prosecution has the burden, it's not a matter of what happened between the two of them. What matters is what the government can prove. This was 13 years ago. I'll be honest with you, in the courtroom, it doesn't matter what you read in the paper and those 40 allegations. My experience with juries are that they, when they get back in that room and they look at the evidence and the witness statements and the expert testimony that's coming, they try to do their jobs, and they try to block out all of the other stuff that they've read and really try to render a decision. Doesn't matter the racial makeup or the gender makeup, although I do think that, ironically, more women on the jury would have been more sympathetic to Bill Cosby, because women on the jury tend to be, in my experience, more judgmental of accusers, women accusers, where there's a prior relationship.
You know what this reminds me of, even though the specific circumstances are significantly different. And for those of you old enough to remember, Darius, you're not, but I'm sure you read Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas. Because, of course, she accused Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court judge, now at that time a nominee, of sexually harassing her. Even after these incidents, she continued to communicate with him. And she said during the hearings this had to do with power. And you know, even after he left the EEOC, that they continued to communicate. And Constance said today in court that even after this alleged incident, because of Bill Cosby's status, a trustee at the university, that she continued to talk to him. And it took many years for her to even share this with someone. So I find that similarity striking.
What power are you defining?
Well, because she, don't
over
forget.
Over him, over her rather.
No, because she was head of basketball operations at Temple. He was a trustee, okay? And as a trustee, and as you know, as a trustee, your word is only slightly less powerful than God at any kind of university.
But within a year or two of this assault, she and her parents drove several miles to go to a performance of his, left him a gift, right? Did not see him and turned around and went back to their home. Now, that's not dispositive
of anything.
Which is
just bizarre in and of itself.
It is inconsistent.
What I don't want us to do here is victim blame. I understand
exactly.
That.
We shouldn't victim blame because there's a power differential in a lot of situations, whether it's within a family, whether it's in a work setting, whether it's in a school setting or a lot of different things.
And I'm not suggesting that she should have.
And there's a lot of inconsistencies, too, because people still have contact with people who harm them in some kind of way.
And that's what I mean about the similarities. Yeah. I just find it's just really striking. I'm not saying that
certainly
she should have or should not.
I mean, there's situations the family could be, you know, even like it within a family when things happen to, say, a child or a grown woman or something like that, they still have to interact with each other and still have to deal with the rest of the family and the rest of the friends. And sometimes there's things that appear inconsistent and they say things later and people blame them or get upset because they came forward later, but they couldn't hold it inside anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
We've seen time after time throughout history where victims do often have to realize what happened. They have to be able to come to grips with it before they have the strength to be able to go out in public. And to your point, Scott, we definitely cannot sit here and blame the victims that have found the strength to be able to not just go before the courtroom, but to go before millions and millions of people and tell their story. Yes, I am a little bit too young to know all the specifics.
You missed a doozy, trust me.
Well, yeah. Whether it's your age or not, the reality is, I'm not blaming the victim. I'm saying if you're going to be a victim and make the accusation, you have to be a credible accuser. Doesn't mean it didn't happen,
but you won't
be able to prove it if you lack credibility.
It's not about blaming the victim. It's not about credibility.
It's everything about credibility.
Look at Cosby. His own words and his deposition, he is admitted to drugging women. He has admitted to giving women drugs, right or wrong, Scott?
Oh, my goodness. Are you cross-examining me now? I wouldn't offer that up to my young friend. I wouldn't do that if I were you. But it has nothing to do with age. His drug use and his admission under oath to how he dealt with women is relevant, probative, but it's not dispositive of what's happening in this Constand trial right here.
Well, I'm sorry to break the news to you, Scott. Your average juror doesn't have a law degree like you, brother.
Well, you don't need a law degree in order to make a judgment on credibility and whether a witness is believable or not believable.
Like, as I was saying, you know, as a woman and as someone who fortunately dodged a bullet with someone in the past, fortunately, nothing happened because I kind of went off. But had something happen and I had to go to court or press charges against this person, there would have been issues of credibility because I invited this person into my home because we were going to work on a journalistic project. He was a photographer. I was a reporter. And, you know, it could have been construed different ways, even though if something had happened, he would have clearly been wrong. But they could have said things that I did. I let him in or, you know, misconstrued something because we said we were going to work together.
And certainly,
there's a lot of gray areas.
And I think I'm not a lawyer, but I think the reality is civil cases or criminal cases, the only thing that really matters to jurors other than evidence is who is credible, particularly when it's a he said, she said, or he said, he said situation. Credibility is everything. Who do you believe?
And that's all it's going to come down to.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. Walter, calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Walter.
What's on my mind is this Donald Trump thing. Even though it reminds me a little bit when Bill Clinton got impeached, And it's so much that on the you have on the left, when Clinton had his scandal and all this came out, that he barely escaped when he didn't get impeached. Now you have Donald Trump basically is as worse as he I think about is he as worse as Bill Clinton or he's even worser than that. Before he called women, he disrespect the handicap. He talk about if I can shoot Hillary Clinton. And then today, I was listening on Channel 4 that Trump was telling Comey, am I being investigated in 2010 that I went to Russia and had messed with Russian.
Yeah, but Walter, what's your point? Because let's say being an unpleasant person is not a crime, okay? So
or impeachable.
Yeah, exactly. So
what I was going to say is this, that it seemed like if with the Comey investigation is just a waste of time, as long as the Republicans are in power, he's not going to get impeached at all. This is kind of like their version of fake news, which we know is real. So I'm just saying that it's just waste.
Well,
but
Walter,
it's going to be interesting. Yeah, nice night.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And but let us say if we are well educated about our history, Richard Nixon had a majority, I believe it was in the House, and he was about to be impeached before he resigned. So, and based on what we saw from the Republicans today with the intelligence chiefs, they are becoming increasingly impatient.
Yeah, let me tell you why I disagree with the caller. You have a president who has got a 34% approval rating. You have midterms coming up in 2018. His base will stay with him no matter what. But his electoral base, that 46% of people, including many independents and some Democrats who voted him in, they're not going to stick with him. His base, those working class white voters, will stick with him, but they've never been enough to put him through the blue wall. And he barely dented it by winning by 70,000 votes in these three Rust Belt states. If the Republicans get frustrated enough and they can't win midterms, or if they start to believe that they cannot keep their jobs, Donald Trump, like anyone else in the White House, those majority Republicans will cut and run. And that's what you got to look for tomorrow, whether it's the beginning or whether they're going to be in deep cut and run phases because they want to get reelected and maintain the majority of the House and Senate. And 2018 is looming. Mm-hmm. That's real.
Scott, I think we found something to agree on here. What you saw with the...
I agree, too.
I was about to have...
You just met me. Go, why am I
just sitting directly across from...
but to your point, you saw once the statements were released today, you had both sides automatically running to him and say, okay, look at this line. This is why we were right. No, look at this line. And this is why we was right. So we'll really see tomorrow when the cross-examination does happen. Scott, I'm sorry that tonight you're the one on the stand, but that,
really,
you don't, Scott. You don't have to testify.
Yeah, all he has to do
says
is
it
just,
all.
He just has to prove it. There you
go. I hope the call is conceded.
I don't play the victim role very well.
Right there, you go.
Yannick, you were nodding your head at the point that Scott was making. I'll give you 30 seconds before the break.
I was just saying that I don't think this is a waste of time at all because we need more transparency, not less. And the more that we can get things out of the open, particularly with, you know, we're having information come through us through Twitter and not through a lot of the other traditional means. So the public has a right to see what's going on.
It's amazing. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Peter calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to Raymond calling from D.C., and we're going to also continue our conversation about Cosby and also about the situation in Montgomery County. Horrible, horrible. But we want to hear what our panel has to say about that. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Inside segment here on The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Let's go back to the phone lines. Peter, calling from Maryland, what's on your mind?
I'm my case is about Comey issue tomorrow.
Okay,
all
go ahead.
All I want to see tomorrow is will Democrats or Republicans put the country before their party?
You know,
so what I want to see.
That is a fascinating question, which goes back to what we were saying before. Earlier in this administration, although we are still very early in this administration, the partisan divide was very, very clear. But again, as I said today, when you are looking at the grilling of these intelligence chiefs, the Republicans gave as much as the Democrats gave. And there is growing impatience, and you really get an opportunity to see that a great many of these senators do understand the difference between, executive privilege and whether or not you just don't want to answer a question.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me just jump in very briefly. There was no executive privilege today.
Exactly.
Defending put forth by the witnesses or the White House. Their responses vis-a-vis not wanting to answer was that in part you had the Mueller investigation. They didn't feel it was appropriate, but they were highly inappropriate in not answering those questions. And
exactly.
As a matter of fact, the acting FBI director at the end said it best. Those conversations that the senators were asking about, they are under investigation, and it's clear they've been shared with Mueller and that they're part of the investigation now. I don't know how many people really got that part, but it was highly inappropriate for them not to answer those questions. There was no legal reason not to, no privilege or anything else.
And that's the thing, because they were even asked by Senator King from Maine whether or not they had any contact with the White House regarding executive privilege. They said no. Whether or not Special Prosecutor Mueller, Special Counsel Mueller had any contact with them about what they could and could not say. The answer was no. Okay. And so King basically said, so what's up?
Right. Exactly.
what's going on? So, Peter, I think the answer to your question is that remains to be seen. Raymond calling from D.C., what's on your mind? Raymond, are you there?
Yeah. I think it's more, I agree with the last caller. I think they just want to cover up something. I think it's,
They who?
The Republicans. I think Republicans are trying to cover something.
Well, like I said, that remains to be seen. Thank you so much for your comment, Raymond. I wanted to take a hard turn and talk about this situation in Montgomery County. I think that it bears discussion. We had two honor students, 17 and 18-year-old, gunned down in an area that, from all reports, say that they probably had no business in. I think the thing that is most shocking is that it happened the day before graduation and that there were some 23 shots. And there have been recordings of these shots and the like. At first blush, Your thoughts about this, Shanique? I mean, obviously, it's a horrible crime and the loss of a young life, but it's just bizarre to me.
It is bizarre. It's so tragic, and it's so sad that happened. And I know it cast a pall on the graduation and has affected their friends and classmates. I mean, it just points out how troubling and bad the violence is. And I'm curious about what's behind this particular shooting and how, if they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and even who it was attended for, because with the number of shots and all of that. But is just so much of that going, and we're losing too many young people.
And there were also reports that they had, at least one of them had money in his hand at the time. So, there's so many questions that are brought to bear in this. I mean, Scott, as an officer of the court, and I'm sure you've seen, some criminal cases too. What comes to mind when you think about this case?
Well, from an investigatory standpoint, you have the bodies, you obviously secure the scene, and you get whatever evidence you can. But the real effort is going to come in, what were these two kids into, on top of being honor students and on top of it being the day before graduation? 90% of the shootings and killings in this country are based on prior relationships at some level, right? If you don't have a prior relationship with someone who's been murdered, you have something like an 85% chance of not getting caught, if you will. So you start to look at their telephones, their computers, who were they interacting with. You talk to their friends. You even chase down rumors, if you will. You're going to – that dragnet is going to get smaller and smaller, whether it was drug-related, whether it was beef-related, whether they had friends who were into something and they just kind of got caught up. You know, it's hard not to have friends. You can't choose your friends when you're 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. Your parents tell you can't, but maybe they had friends who were into doing something wrong, and they just kind of got caught up, or were even celebrating graduation. No one knows.
Scott,
but the police
Scott,
will
you're doing it again.
That.
You're doing it again here. You're looking
doing
at
what?
It from the standpoint. You're saying, okay, what were they involved in for this to happen?
I was talking about from an investigatory standpoint. That's what the homicide detectives will look to try to identify the killer or killers.
But he did kind of say just being with the wrong people, too. A lot of times, young people are in the wrong place at the wrong time all the time.
But when is it ever acceptable for a young person to get shot?
It's not acceptable, and I didn't say that.
This is very frustrating because I know 2 days from now we're going to be talking about something different. And we have a real problem in this country where young people, and I'm 23 years old, and I fear for my life at times. I fear for the lives of the young people that I work with on a daily basis. Because young people continue to get gunned down in this country day after day after day. And we talk about it. We put up hashtags. It's the 24-hour news cycle. But we're not getting to the root cause of these problems. There are guns and every other thing in our communities. And we're harming one another.
Well, let me say,
I agree with you.
And I think that is an important, you know, side issue. I think that.
It's the most important issue.
Well, yeah.
You have two people who have been murdered. You want to find out to give the family some solace that they've caught the people who did this crime.
And this is why there's a lot of levels with this. Yeah. Well, that's my point. This is why this is so shocking. Not to say that that there is a less shocking murder or a less shocking method. But as you know, as we have seen in many cases, whether it's gangland style shootings, whether it's, you know, domestic violence relationships, when you're talking about gun violence, you know, one or two shots, it's done. There were 23 shots fired, and
Wow. And
at least two separate firearms, 17 and 18 year old, let's say honor student. We know that, you know, one of them was a Muslim. Does that have anything to do with it? I'm sure they're going to look into it.
But here's the thing is that because they're honor students, we're talking about it. You go to Southeast D.C. This happens every single day and we let it go by.
Well, let me say this again. You know, I think that we can talk about, and Yannick, you can chime in on this as, you know, as a journalism professor, is Darius right that if this had happened in Southeast, same circumstances with two young black men, would we be covering it the same way?
We should cover more of it. I mean, he's right. Absolutely. There's a lot of things that we never hear about that happen every day, all day long. Might be one bullet, you know, but there's so many cases that happen that never make it to the news. And we do need to pay more attention in different communities, and not just because they're honor students. But there's a lot of different levels, a lot of different systemic issues we need to look at, too. You know, whether it's the number of guns out there and, you know, protection, you know, safety issues, just all kind of things. But I know, and this is predating you because we know we're talking about different ages. I mean, I felt relatively safe wandering around when I was, you know, 18, 19, 20, celebrating graduation or just having fun as a teenager, as a young adult. And it's, you know, it's a shame that fewer people can do that these days.
Well, don't miss my point, because like I said, under these circumstances, if these were two black men, but and this happened in Southeast D.C. or Northeast D.C., same circumstances, 23 shots. Do you think we would still be covering it?
We should. We may not be, but we should. And I mean, particularly here, we should.
I mean,
at WHUR, yeah. Here, yes.
And like I said, same circumstances, honor student, because let's say the young man who was stabbed at the University
could be a high school dropout.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Well, but no, I think But I think history, or a person's personal history, as we do in journalism, we dig into finding out who these people are. Well, yeah, if a person has a long criminal record, and then of drug involvement, and then they're shot during the course of a drug deal, yeah, that's a line. That's a line in the paper. It may get into one of my newscasts or someone else. But when you're talking about dozens and dozens of bullets, and when you're talking about, you know, young men who have no criminal history, and like I said, black or white.
But a lot of young black and brown people can end up with a criminal record easily for a number of different things.
I understand that. But I
think that we do need to look at more of these stories. As they happen. But you're
I think the things that would have us do this, it would be because these circumstances are unusual. Mm-hmm. Like I said, just like the situation, the young brother at the University of Maryland, the Bowie State University student. Those, it's horrible. We would have reported it anyway, but that was a unique situation. And there were so many different angles. HBCU, exemplary, young man, great family, military, all of those things. That was a story, horrible as it was.
But everybody has a story. And if you look at some of the coverage when people have gone through, say, a case, even if they've looked in like a day of shootings or something, and they've profiled every single person who got shot, everyone has a story. Everyone is someone's son or daughter, whether they've been in trouble or not. And everybody has some redeeming qualities. So it would be good if more coverage couldn't be paid to that, whether it's, through local, smaller community.
I say this, it's ironic to say this when we're on the radio, but when talking about gun violence,
talking about violence in general,
are we not tired of just talking about it? Are we not tired of just tweeting about it?
But that's not the point that I was making. I mean, that, like I said, what to do about it is another thing. My thing is, the incident itself and looking at, how we are looking at it, which is not to say that, gun violence isn't important. But like I said, we're not just talking about gun violence. We're talking about violence and who is involved. Either way, gotta go. I want to thank A. Scott Bolden, Darius
thank
Baxter,
you.
And Yannick Lamb for participating in this conversation. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, June 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR and at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3.